need to be able to understand how to break something that is really hard to understand for everybody to understand. So be already.
Things I struggle with, which a lot of newbies will also struggle with, is the information overload out there. Yeah. Like this tutorial hell, you're learning and learning.
Very honest with you, like very straight up honest with you. Yeah. I didn't navigate it. I also struggled pretty much like everyone else. You can, and a proof that I knew that I struggled was that if you go to my Udemy account, you see a lot of courses that I bought.
Like knowing when exactly to leave and when to just move on. I think a lot of people struggle with knowing when to actually leave and say, okay, I'm done with this. I need to move to the next level. My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections to balancing work life and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. Hi everyone, welcome to the very first episode of My Tech Journey with Esther. I'm very excited to, you know, start this podcast, and today we have a special guest with us. We have Blessing Adeshiji. He's a senior developer relations engineer at Circle, and I'm excited about this conversation, you know, get to hear his story and his journey. So thank you, Blessing, for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you, Esther, for having me on the show. And it was really amazing to learn that I'm the first person you're speaking to on the show. So really honored to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good to have you. So before we jump into your whole journey and, you know, hearing your story, so let's start with like an icebreaker. What's one hobby that you do outside of work that maybe people do not know about?
Oh, okay. I think funny how I was thinking about it. My hobby, most people know about my hobby, but because the only hobby I do outside of work that is not work is play sports. Like I play basketball, I play football, and then I go to the gym. Yeah, I like to be active. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I think another hobby that I've sort of picked up that it's not work, but it's still somehow related to work is I think I've enjoyed learning how like photography, videography.
Oh, are you serious?
So I'm having to like, you can check my YouTube dashboard or like YouTube, you know, the YouTube home screen. They say how to know what someone is really interested in is when you check up their YouTube homepage. You see a lot of videos on like video editing,
history and everything.
Video editing and video editing, like cameras, mic, different thing related to like phone, like videography and photography. I think more videography rather than photography. And I've also like, getting a couple of gears that I'm testing with. Yeah. So I think it's somewhat like a hobby that I'd like to pursue apart from writing code.
That's really cool. Cause I used to take pictures, product photography before.
Oh, nice. So you're using that for your YouTube channel,
I wish. That was lots of product photography. I also developed video editing for my YouTube, so I do lots of video editing on my own. I also have someone that I work with to edit for me because of time.
Same workflow for me. I do my editing, and then I have someone I work with to also help.
Exactly, because that's the best thing. Editing is a lot of work, especially when you have to start adding effects and all of that.
Like exactly. So if you want to know the video I didn't edit myself, you see that it doesn't have that special effect. It doesn't have a lot of all those.
It's just straight to the point.
It's just jump cuts, maybe some match cuts, adding B-rolls and adding like text, and pretty much that's it. So just me sharing what I know. And I've been going heavy on short form content, Instagram, TikTok, Instagram, TikTok threads, but I somewhat don't post on Twitter because I know you post on Twitter heavily because you're heavily technical on like with your shorts on Twitter. But for me, I want I want someone that is not even in tech to understand what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking about the tech content that are not so technical
that
on
is
Instagram.
Not for and, like newbies and
yeah, exactly, newbies exactly, and exactly. Because yeah, because I want that to be outside my work. I'm on Twitter. I can talk. I can go really technical on like content I'm sharing, right? But outside that, Instagram shorts, YouTube shorts, I want like everybody to be able to understand what I'm saying. So. Pretty much that's
so
the distinction.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. So, I know that you studied petroleum engineering. I've done some research.
Oh, wow, really?
From University of Ibadan. I'm curious to know, like, what influenced your decision to study petroleum engineering?
Oh, okay. So, I would say it wasn't a direct decision, or it wasn't like a well thought out decision, and I'll explain why. So after my secondary school, after I finished from secondary school, my secondary school was in Osun State, and I happened to be the best graduating student, got almost all of the awards, like, you know.
Nice.
So and I was pretty good. I was pretty good with math, physics, further math, yeah. And the sort of next thing they'll tell you to go study is they'll tell you to do mechanical engineering. Or do something like that. So, and at that age, you really don't know what you should study, because you don't know how they sort of play together to affect who you are as a person, or like what the future is saying about what you want to study, right? And also in school, I was very good with technical drawing. So you can consider me as sort of like the engineering type of guy, right? So I'm like, okay, my jump was pretty good. But somehow, for some weird reason, I wasn't admitted into UI that year. And it was very disappointing, because when people go, they'll be like, oh, wow, you graduated as the best student.
Why is not admitted?
Yeah, but exactly, right? It seemed very disappointing. But what then happened for me was that I found Cambridge Advanced A-Levels, which is somewhat like the British, I don't know if you're familiar, like the British A-Levels. Advanced...
Yeah,
it's like the British Advanced Sixth Form thing, something you do after secondary school. It's more advanced, sort of gives
before
you like
uni,
the
yeah.
before uni, yeah. And it's like an exam you do to get into Oxford, Cambridge, Kent, in really big university in the UK. And that was where my head was at the time. Like, I really want to get into Oxford, actually, particularly Oxford. So what I did was that. I looked it up. I knew I needed A-levels, and I knew I needed at least a star, which is so. And the way it works, the way the Cambridge grading works is that 90 to 100 is a star, 89 to 80 is A. So it's really, really, really complex, yeah. And it's like an advanced exam. So what I did was I studied for it. I actually studied for it in 9 months. And usually what you have to do is you have to study for it 2 years. Actually, most people, even in the UK, all these common sixth form colleges, they study for it in 2 years. So what I did was, in Nigeria, a lot of these schools actually take you through the curriculum for 9 years. So I did that I did that for 9 months, and then I got A stars in physics, and that was what I wanted. So I was excited, and then I went on to do the next exam to study in Oxford, which is the physics aptitude test. And I wanted to study mechanical engineering. Don't forget, like, you are the engineering type of person. They want you to study mechanical engineering. So I did that to study physics, to do the physics aptitude test to get into Oxford. I passed the exam, got above, I think, 78%. And the next stage is to get interviewed here in Oxford. For like the, before you get the admission, before you then get the scholarship. So unfortunately, I wasn't invited to do the interview to get into Oxford. So, but UI was kind of like my option two. And I didn't want to study mechanical engineering in UI. So I then picked petroleum engineering.
Mm.
So I didn't even think I was going to resume, right? So it was when I didn't get the Oxford and I didn't get like jackpot opportunity back then. And that was in 2014. Yeah, that was in 2014. So I just went to UI, and I started from 200 level studying petroleum engineering in UI. And also, the reason why I picked petroleum engineering in UI is that in Nigeria, everybody sort of talks about like oil money That, like, that's where the money is. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I might as well just be
professional engineer. You will have the money.
Yeah. And so I was looking at my career, then I was looking at it more of oil and gas. And maybe as we sort of continue speaking, I will explain to you why I switched from petroleum engineering to tech. But then I was looking at, I'm going to work at Chevron, Shell, ExxonMobil, one of those big oil firm. And after finishing in UI, because that's pretty much what everyone does, or Schlumberger, they just move from UI to one of those big top firms.
Big companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so nice to hear, because I actually studied mechanical engineering.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I can really relate with you on the TD.
Yeah.
Using all those road train boards. And
Yeah. Pretty so fun time. Nice, yeah.
Yeah, mechanical engineering was fun too. So we're actually getting into why you switch from pet and gas to, or pet engineering to technical or software development. At what point? Was it after leaving school that you knew that, okay, I'm not going to use petroleum engineering? Or what made you switch?
Yeah, okay. So pretty much how it happened was that I did my internship, petroleum engineering internship at ADAX Nigeria. And ADAX Nigeria, like really good, one of like really good petroleum engineering oil and gas firm in Lagos, Ozumba Ambadiwe, just really close to the toll gate. But I did it there. I spent 6 months and I worked at one of the best departments, which was drilling engineering department. But as I was learning the petroleum engineering basics, the practical, because we're also drilling, we're going to the rig. I don't know if you know anything about that. Yeah. We're traveling
and
to the rig.
Practical.
Yeah, really practical. And because when I got to ADAX, the entry level, whatever, was really complex. They do a test for you. After doing the test, then you then get in sort of like the normal software engineering lifestyle. Yeah. Now you do like a quantitative test where you do math, you do like English, you do abstract reasoning. And then I did that, I got in, and after getting into ADAX, you then do another interview where, like, if you perform the best, they take you to like drilling, which was one of the best department then, because that's where the action actually happened. So again, very competitive. I performed the best in the interview, and then I got into drilling department, and then I worked really well with like great engineers. But one thing I realized then was that they needed someone to crunch data, right? Because we're getting a lot of data from the rig, and they needed someone to crunch data to look at all this stuff and make sense of it. Most especially in the health and safety side. So I was basically crunching data to understand like Excel dashboard, basically. So that opened my eyes to data analysis, right? So I'm like, okay, this seems really interesting. Their ability to analyze data and then take that to give meaningful information, and that seems really, really nice. So during my internship, I looked it up and I was like, I saw a lot of things you could learn, and I came across Data Camp. So I'm like, okay, after my internship, I'm going to continue learning this. So when I got back from my internship, I started learning R programming language, which was one of like really deep statistical programming language. Yeah. So I picked it up, but in school, I also connected with some of my guys that were also doing Python stuff. So then I was like, okay, let me switch from R to Python, because the community for R wasn't that big. So when you run into errors, you really don't know who to speak to. And I saw my guys doing amazing stuff with Python. They were even preparing for a boot camp stuff even in school. So I'm like, okay, let me join them, and then let me skill up, let me learn Python. So I taught myself how to write Python along with those my colleagues back in school. And this was my final year actually, because the internship program happened after my 400 level, and then moving to 500 level. So that was when everything changed for me. So I knew I was going to either drop petroleum engineering and focus on tech fully, right? And then, or do both of them together. So, or do both of them together. But I realized that I really enjoy tech more than petroleum engineering, because even though in petroleum engineering, you do a lot of math, you do a lot of algebra, you do a lot of real analysis, you do a lot of all these math that you need for computer science, you do a lot of statistics. So, and these are the baseline for machine learning, data science. So sort of like I understood already when I was reading all the statistics books that teaches you how to analyze data. I understood most of the concept already. So I'm like, it's a no-brainer for me to transfer my skill set from petroleum engineering into this area. So that was pretty much how the change happened for me. And it's been up ever since.
That's interesting. And are you thinking of going back or still?
No. So I funny how I don't remember jack shit about petroleum engineering. Yeah, I don't remember anything again. Like, I don't remember anything. Pretty much, to be honest, when I say I don't remember anything, it's mainly because I decide to not, like, pursue actively. But if I see something that maybe from first principle, I can still explain it to you because, of course, we understood it back then in school and it doesn't leave you. Even when you see it, you still pretty much understand it. But as to going back, no, I'm not. That's done for me. That was just a means for me to get into tech. Yeah, because even my first job was as a data scientist at an energy management firm. And that was literally 3 weeks after graduating from school. So I interviewed at this.
We'll get to your first job. I'm curious to know, like, from how you transitioned from, like, all the skills you learned, you started with R, and then you moved on to Python. For me, I attended a boot camp. It was a 9-month bootcamp. And I think one of the things I struggle with, which a lot of newbies will also struggle with, is the information overload out there.
Yeah.
Like this tutorial hell, you're learning. Different people are saying, for me, I'm from a JavaScript background, front-end development. So I'm saying learn JavaScript. After JavaScript, learn Vue. Some people are saying learn React. So how did you manage all those, you know, information overload? And how did you ensure that you're actually developing the skills to help you and not just getting stuck in the tutorial hell?
Oh, okay. I'll be very honest with you, like very straight up honest with you. Yeah. I didn't navigate it. I also struggled pretty much like everyone else. You can, and a proof that I knew that I struggled was that if you go to my Udemy account, you see a lot of courses that I bought, right? So back then I felt like, oh, I need this course to get me out of what I need. Like, I need this course, and that's basically tutorial L. Mm-hmm. So at the point where things changed for me was in 2020, myself and some of my colleagues, we got this opportunity of reviewing project at Udacity. So that's sort of like Udacity mentorship. And what that means is that Udacity nano degree, you come in and you review people's project, people taking like all these technical projects, you review their project and they pay you money for that. Which was nice. I was earning in dollars. Actually, my first foreign exchange salary back then in Nigeria. Yeah. So, and one of the things they make you do is that for you to review a nano degree, you have to complete a project. So that means once you complete that project, you are certified to be able to review the project. You are certified to be able to guide others through. So, well, one thing is I need that by that time, and I had like a couple of project to actually review, and for you to be able to review, you have to go through the courses. But I developed this skill actually that why can't I just start doing the project without going through the courses? So anything I need, I'll just go to Google, I search for it, and then I use that and I build it. And at the end of the day, I was able to actually build the project without going through any tutorial, just in time learning. So from that moment in time. And I will explain how I actually played a strong part in my career, because I moved from data science to AI to blockchain, right? Pretty much cut across different industries. So I really, really prioritize just in time learning. If I need anything, that's like when I need to learn it. So if I need to work on a project, that's when I go out there to learn something, because there's nothing good comes from me taking a particular course and then I just forget about it. I don't do anything from that particular knowledge. For example, in 2020 as well, during COVID, I learned how to write Golang. If you give me a syntax of Golang right now, I'll struggle to understand it because I've forgotten. I didn't use it for anything, right? So I didn't mean I practiced just in time learning. I would have been able to build something with it and then that knowledge will have stick to with me longer than I expect. So even if there's any beginner out there watching this podcast right now, is that there are a lot of information. You see a lot of tutorials out there on YouTube because everybody's creating, everybody's sharing knowledge. There's nothing wrong with that, but you just have to prioritize what you need to learn. So if you are there and you want to learn maybe JavaScript, you want to build a project, you can pick a clone project on YouTube. Yeah, complete that clone project. At least you already know that because you completed that clone project, you can get knowledge from that to build other stuff. So just in time learning.
Yeah, that's so good. I think just-in-time learning is actually something that is very helpful. Like, it's a concept that is helpful because I find that a lot of beginners kind of just want to learn the entire, for example, if they are watching a course, they just watch the entire course. Yeah. And that course has beginner, intermediate, advanced concepts that will probably get them lost. So if they're just focusing on, okay, I want to know this particular aspect, pick a project, watch videos that are on that particular concept, and then they know that concept before moving on. So that's so useful to help people that are getting started in tech.
Yeah, and now we have ChatGPT. Yeah,
exactly.
Now we have ChatGPT. So to be honest, we have ChatGPT. And advice, one thing you can do is if there's anything you want to, like any project, just think about a particular project. Look for example code online or something. Put that in ChatGPT. Prompt ChatGPT to sort of help you get started. And from there, you sort of know what you need. So, and as you know what you need, if you feel like you need any help, ChatGPT is always right by your side. You can even pay for Copilot. Pay for Copilot. That will be in your VS Code. And you have something that, you want to complete a particular syntax of code. You can use Copilot to complete that syntax. Because one thing you're always scared of is you feel like you can't do it because like you're thinking about the entire thing. But with ChatGPT, you can start small and then move So you were in a different time. When I came into tech, there was no ChatGPT.
Exactly. There was no ChatGPT. You have to write the entire thing by yourself. The whole syntax.
Yeah, yeah.
I know I used to struggle with syntax, like the whole, you know, JavaScript.
Yeah, at some point I felt like I had to memorize some syntax. Like I literally used to try to memorize syntax and now I feel like no one cares.
There's
actually.
No point because you have Copilot, you have ChatGPT.
Exactly.
So
you just
the values and tweak it.
Yeah. So just spend time understanding what it is you're getting from the AI tools, what it is they're like. Because if it gives you a code, ask it to explain. Sometimes they get everything completely wrong and it's your own intuition that will now come into play. And also, I solved a lot of lead code as well. Like, maybe we'll get to that during the interview. But while I was preparing to interview, I solved a lot of lead code. And what that actually revealed to me is that it gave me that analytical mindset or like that logic, critical thinking, where I'm able to like look at something I want to do. I'm able to look at a piece of code and decipher what it is that is going on. And that's something that is invaluable and it will stick to you till the end of time.
Yeah, that's so good. So good advice. So now let's go back to your job search.
Yeah,
you were talking about how you got the job like 3 weeks after graduating.
Okay,
one of the fastest. So how exactly did you find it? Just walk me through the entire journey.
So that was my first job out of school. Studied petroleum engineering, right? Like did the project presentation thingy that we always do. And literally 3 weeks after that, I started my new role as a data scientist at an energy management firm in Lekki, Lagos. So how that happened was that one of my friends saw a Twitter post on that, and then he shared with me like, "Oh, they're paying 50,000 naira for this role." I think it was supposed to be 40,000 naira or 50,000 naira. I can't really remember. Right, it was an internship role, and they're looking for someone with like analytical mindset, can crunch number with Excel, right? So, and then I then submitted my resume that wasn't that, because but one thing that helped me was that I participated at boot camps, hackathons actually. So Data Science Nigeria used to organize these hackathons back then. So there you go on Kaggle. Kaggle is one of the biggest data science competition platform where you take hackathons, you take project, and then you complete that for a prize. So Data Science Nigeria actually did a boot camp where a bunch of us, all of us in Nigeria, like a data science enthusiast or AI enthusiast were tasked to compete on Kaggle. So I did that while I was still in school, kind of like a few months before I applied to that job. And my model actually performed well, I think top 10 or like top 15. Okay. So that was on my CV. And I also went for a particular on-site hackathon organized by Data Science Nigeria and Access Bank FinTech Foundry. So Access Bank FinTech Foundry is sort of like a digital bank initiative to push technology adoption in banking. So Access Bank and Data Science Nigeria, they partnered together and they organized a machine learning hackathon for us to build like, sort of like a loan prediction and default loan application. So I did that with the team, and my team also performed great. So that was also on my resume. So when I applied for this job without experience, I put all those projects, all those like on-site hackathon and results, I put them on my resume, and then I got a call, right? And then from the call, they invited me to come to Lagos for interview. And then when I got to Lagos, they gave like some energy management data set and asked me to crunch the number with Excel, right? So I did that with Excel because bear in mind, I was really good at Excel from my previous role, internship role, right? I pretty much picked up Excel and did that. And then they learned that I could write Python and they wanted someone on their team with Python knowledge, right? So pretty much I performed really, really well at the interview. And then they were like, wow, they are pleased to give me an offer to start right after my school, which was like a week from the date of interview. So everything in total was like 3 weeks, and then I started the role. So, and you know, after your university, you have to do your NYSC. So so I sort of connected everything together, and then I did my NYSC. So
that's why you did it in Lagos.
Yeah, did my NYSC in Lagos, and it was really nice in a way that I basically in like 4 or 5 months I moved from being an intern to being like the full data scientist on the team, because the full-time data scientist on the team actually left for another role after I joined. And because we worked together and I pretty much understand how everything works, how our energy data moves, how everything connects together, how we analyze data, the problem that we're facing and how we're solving them. And then I also picked up data engineering because we're having to crunch a lot of like numbers, because we get data every minute and we have multiple sites with multiple sensors that sends data to us remotely. And we have like connectors and we have different Python scripts that does the ETL process, which is the extract, transform, load process. So I pretty much understood everything in a couple of months. And when she left, it was a no-brainer for me to fit into the role. So that's how I got my first job.
That's really nice. I feel like the moment you knew that, okay, this engineering is not really what I want to do, you just zeroed in on data engineering and learned as much as you could learn. And then was this the only job that you applied to, or were there other jobs that you applied to?
So, funny how this was the only job I applied to, after university. But from that moment onward, like after spending a year at that company, right, I then start to now apply to more jobs. So, first of all, one thing I want to say to anyone that is watching this podcast, at some point in your life, you have to understand when to actually resign and when to quit what you're doing. So you have to know when to chase the next challenge. So pretty much at the end of when I was getting closer to finishing my NYC, I knew that I needed to get more understanding. I knew that I needed to get more knowledge. And the design of the team was so small that I knew that I need to go out there because of the way it's not their fault. It's just the way the team is. Yeah. So I resigned. I actually dropped my resignation letter. My boss was very, very surprised and was like, wow, like you're doing well. Why are you leaving? And I was like, no, I need to like chase the next challenge. I just feel like it's something I've made a decision, right? So I resigned and then I moved from Lagos back to IB. And while I was at home, that was when I knew that. And this time I don't understand web development. Yeah, I was just the data guy, data engineering, data science. So then I go on Codecademy, and then I learned JavaScript. I learned like HTML, CSS. I learned React. I learned all this rendering, front end, everything. And then I picked up Node.js for back end. And I also, I'm like, I understand Python already, right? So the reason why I did this was because I felt like the job, because I was applying to a ton of jobs, the job I needed, right? Like, I needed to expand my skill set or expand my capabilities so that I can have the ability to apply to more jobs, right? So, and it's because I'm self-taught, someone that...
We've all been taught that resumes and cover letters are the keys to landing a job. But I'm here to tell you that there's a far more powerful tool that hiring managers are actually paying attention to. Ready to hear it? It's called your portfolio site. That's right. While everyone else is tweaking fonts on their resume, your developer portfolio is how you can wow recruiters. It shows off your creativity and skills in a way that no boring resume could ever. But building a polished portfolio from scratch takes forever, right? Wrong. I've created the ultimate portfolio site template that does all the heavy lifting for you, built with Next.js pages and Chakra UI. This portfolio site immediately introduces you to potential employers, highlighting your career achievements, gives them quick links to contact you, and check out all your socials and GitHub. All you need to do is make tweaks and deploy, and then you're good to go. Access the code for this portfolio site by visiting the freelancehq.com/getmyportfolio.
Compare me to someone that studied computer science. Probably in year two or year three, they must have learned one of these things. JavaScript. So pretty much, if you're a self-learner, you always have to learn, right? And you always have to chase that like next knowledge. So pretty much I resigned and then I went back home. Again, in like a couple of weeks, I think also like 3 weeks after resigning, because I resigned June ending. And in like mid-month of July, towards the end of July, I got another job, right? So this time around, I got a job as a data scientist at an e-learning company. And the reason why I accepted that job was that they were like, you're going to be creating technical content also with your data science stuff.
Do you mean writing?
Yeah, say again.
Blog articles. Do you mean technical?
No, like videos. Articles. Okay. Yeah. Like videos, because they were trying to build that Udacity model for Africans, right? Really great project. More like they were one of the first to ever like build that big e-learning platform for Africans actually. So they were like, yeah, we're happy to bring you on board. And the funny thing about the recruitment process was that I just saw the job post online. I've applied to a ton of jobs at this point in time, because at the point where I resigned, I started applying to a ton of jobs. I wanted to take part in the HNG internship for software development. And then I joined this online community on Slack. It's called Dev Center, right? I don't know if you're familiar with Dev Center.
No, I'm familiar with
it. Oh, so on Dev Center, they post like a ton of jobs. So they post a ton of gigs, web development, beginner, internship, mid-level. They don't post a lot of data science. So that was why I thought that, man, for me to get a job from this platform, I need to learn what these guys are talking about. I need to learn JavaScript, front-end, everything, right? So back to my story. Then I got the job, and basically it was SQL that helped me, like my knowledge writing structured query language was what helped me with the job. So on my, like during the interview, they asked a ton of SQL questions and I was able to answer them. It was sort of like a technical question, but think about it. You have to write the code using SQL. So you have to query like a database, get the data that they want you to get from. So they were like, they want to build a ton of data science content. And literally one of my first course that I built, was SQL course, really detailed course.
Is this still available?
Yeah, it's still available on their platform. Yeah, it's still available. I can give you the link and probably add to the description. Yeah. So it's still available on their platform, and I've seen like a ton of people send me private LinkedIn messages that's probably one of the best SQL course they ever like took. I did Pandas. So Pandas is a framework in data science that you use to analyze data set. So I remember like back then in school when I was learning, I spent a ton of time trying to understand Pandas. So I used that my knowledge to build a Pandas course, and I built that course again. But again, I left that company kind of like 7 months or 8 months. I just resigned. And the reason why I resigned that role was that I got like a recruiter from Google actually reached out to me on LinkedIn. So they reached out for me to interview for a role in Poland for software engineering with the cloud team. So I felt like, wow, this is an opportunity.
This is the next step.
Yeah, so this is an opportunity that you don't get often, right?
Yeah.
So, and I was spending 10 hours to 11 hours or 12 hours. Like, I was spending long hours at my current day job. And by that time, I also started freelancing. So I was freelancing well on Upwork, doing a couple of gigs. Nice. And then I was doing Udacity mentorship, and that was paying in dollars. So in a month, I could then average of $400 to $500. By the time I converted to Naira, that seemed like a decent salary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I felt like, okay, best thing for me to do is to leave my full-time job and then focus, go all in on Google so that I can basically interview at Google, right? And then I would leave Nigeria, I'll join Google. Yeah. Like, I was already thinking about how everything will play, will come to play. And funny how, so what I did was, I got, like, there was this really nice community that as Ayo is on Twitter right now. He created a community, yeah, for people, that was back in 2021, created a community for people that want to get into Google. And you have like an interview coming up. So what we do, okay, that community is that we help each other solve data structures and algorithm questions, lead code style questions. We go during the week, we solve questions, then we come back on calls, then ask each other questions, go over different concepts in preparation for the exam. Interview. So yeah. I did my first interview, and it was really technical. That was my first Google Fang question style. Funny how I solved. So I was given two questions by the interviewer. I solved the first one, and then I provided an optimization strategy, because kind of you probably do like a brute force solution, and then you probably optimize using either. Exactly. So you optimize the code, and then you talk about the time complexity. You talk about the space complexity. Oh, exactly, right? So I walked through everything really, really nice. Then the second question came, and I wasn't able to get that done in like the given time. So I think it was about 45 minutes. I think I solved the first one for like 25 minutes. But by the time I'm done with like the 15, 10 minutes with the second one, the recruiter was already saying that it's almost time for us to go over questions. So literally, I just tried to like solve my second question in half. Or like maybe like let's say 80%. So funny how maybe it took me like 3 weeks to hear back from the recruiter, and unfortunately I didn't get in. I wasn't devastated, but I was kind of pained. So but then I just picked up myself. Bear in mind that I'd already resigned for my role, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So then I resigned so I was just doing freelancing, Udacity. I did that for a couple of months, and then I joined Sterling Go Money Bank as a growth data scientist, which was somewhat like a senior data science role. And it was really nice. But unfortunately, I only spent 2 months because I got a job at my previous company, which was sort of like an AI company building models on top of GPTs at the time. So that was back in 2021, way before ChatGPT, right? That was in August. So that was when I got the role as a developer relations engineer. And that itself is another entire different story.
Another field, but
it was so much related, because if you think about it, machine learning, natural language processing. So I'd work on a ton of projects, even like not even full-time role, like side projects. Even I think I worked on a freelance or a consulting side gig project that where I had to deal with a lot of NLP problems. So that helped me understand NLP, and that was one thing I talked about during my interview. And before that interview, I interviewed with Bloomberg for software engineering role, but unfortunately, again, I didn't get in. And got so good. Luckily for me, I got into this US, because it was fully remote, US firm AI company.
Nice. Wow. Your story is so inspiring. You were very strategic, like knowing when exactly to leave and when to just move on.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. It's difficult.
People struggle with knowing when to actually leave and say, okay, I'm done with this. I need to move to the next level. But you were very strategic from your first job to the next, just knowing exactly how to build your own career, because I found out that in this tech world that we are in, I think your career growth is really up to you, right? It's not like anyone will say, okay, you're moving to this next level. It's really up to you to determine, I need this, I want to become this in the next 2 years, this is what I will do. So we're really strategic.
Thanks. Thanks. So, but it wasn't easy, but if looking back, right, it was something that I like. One thing that always comes to mind is that I always think I didn't get a computer science degree, right? Mm-hmm. So if someone with a computer science degree is doing something once, twice, I have to do that particular stuff 4 times, 5 times so that I can level up and match them. Yeah.
True. So I know that you've mentioned a couple of skills that you've picked up, like you started with R, Python, and then you've gone on to, you know, develop. You even talked about machine learning, NLPs. Yeah. Now you work with the blockchain and all of that. So how have you really, over the years, ensured that you are not, like, lagging behind, but you're still, you know, moving on with the current trends, picking up skills? How do you ensure that you don't get overwhelmed with all of what's going on out there, but you're able to still push forward and learn and, you know, just grow your career?
There's something. I was having a discussion with my friend like a couple of weeks ago. I think it was in October. When we're on a call and we're just chatting, like, all of us started back then, and we're just like catching up. So they mentioned something that Blessing is always interviewing. Like, anytime they come, guy, I'm working on a recruitment project, I'm working on something, I'm preparing for this interview. They're like, Blessing is always interviewing. And one thing that, looking back, when I interview, I don't know, like, I get to learn something new, and they give you like a recruitment project. So most of the things I know now, I pick them up while preparing for an interview or while doing a particular recruitment project. Think about any power of tech. I've done a recruitment project for it. I've done DevOps recruitment project. I've done software engineering recruitment project. Nice. I've done machine learning recruitment project. I've done, I think the one I even did before joining my current company was Rust recruitment project. And I'd never written a line of Rust before. I just went, there are things that I like, crash course in Rust. I might not be really good.
As you're in demand.
Learning. Yeah, just in time learning, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I might not be like the best Rust guy out there, but at least I understand a few concepts. And also one thing I would like to point out is there was a time in my life I went back, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, I actually went back to like the fundamentals. And when I'm like, there's this book called Computer Science Distilled. So Computer Science Distilled is a really great book. I recommend for everybody to read. It was when I was preparing for my Google interview, was recommended by Ayo. He recommend for everybody to read that particular book. Yeah, so I read the book, and that book actually opened my eyes to like computer science, how to think, the logic, critical thinking, pretty much everything. So if you know that, you can pick up any programming language. Can pick up JavaScript. I write JavaScript. I write TypeScript now at work. I started as a Python guy, pretty much moved from Python to TypeScript. So if I want to learn another programming language, I have that foundation knowledge already. So if you're out there and you're starting your tech career, I really recommend like just close that noise, spend a couple of time picking up that fundamental, understand how the internet works, understand different computer science, like data structures, different algorithms. Pretty much spend time just picking up all these fundamentals, because they would help you learn anything you want to learn. They would help you get that skill set. And to answer your question on how do I stay up to date, I literally stay on YouTube almost every day. So there's this thing I do, right? There's a particular, if somebody, there's great guys, because I'm also a creator on YouTube, there are great guys that I'm subscribed to, and they actually share great learnings, great information about what they're currently working on. So, for example, Theo, The Prime Gene, a lot of all these great guys, I'm subscribed to their channel, and they share really helpful tips, and really, like, for example, the next framework, they share really great stuff about Next. And then, for example, I think like a few weeks ago, I completed my sample Next project, where I built like sort of like a nice front end with Next, and then I understand how Next works, and then I'm using Next and my pro and my company and my role to build like a demo app for other people. Yeah, so that's me pretty much. Yeah, so if there's any cool thing outside, and if there's any new thing in AI, and then I use programming language also to automate a part of my life. Exactly. So for example, like AI, I could use the assistant API, which I've actually done. OpenAI announced the assistant API a couple of weeks, I think it was 2 weeks ago. Yeah, I've used it to create something nice. Yeah. So, and that's how I learned. So now if I need to use the assistant API, I already know, like, I already know how to integrate it.
How to use it.
Yeah. So,
that's so good.
It's not easy, but it's just something
you have to do. It's not easy.
It's something you have to do.
Just put your head down and learn, but it comes with like just in time learning, whatever you need in that particular time, learn it and then just keep on learning and learning.
Yeah.
So, we're gradually getting to the end of our
discussion.
I just want to know how you also transitioned from like data engineering, machine learning, and all of that into blockchain, because now you work at Circle, which is a blockchain company.
Yeah.
So, how did you manage to become like a developer relations engineer, that DevRel field, from regular software engineering? What made you make that switch?
Okay, yeah, so if I look back, so 2014, I mentioned that I did A-levels. What I didn't mention was that after my A-levels, I was teaching math and physics to students who want to write A-levels because I got a star. So that sort of opened my eyes to a certain skill set that I have, breaking complex topics into like something that is easy to understand. And it's not everybody that actually have that skill set. And if you are going to be a developer advocate, that's your top priority skill set. You need to be able to understand how to break something that is really hard to understand for everybody to understand. So I already really, really owned that skill set. And then I worked at e-learning company, basically creating online course while I worked as a data scientist also. So that also helped me own my skill set of explaining complex topics to everyone. And I've also created courses. I've created courses with Coursera. I actually did a generative AI course with Coursera recently this year. So how I landed my developer relations role was that the company, my previous company where I worked, the AI company, they wanted to recruit me as a React visualization engineer. Yeah, okay. Yeah, really different from developer relations. So my role then would be that I'll use React, D3JS to draw visualization dashboard, showing our client different analytics. So if you have an account with us, you basically go on your dashboard, you see your usage, your token count, and you see your cost, everything. So they wanted to pick recruitment for that role. But during the call, the engineering manager actually, when we started speaking, he actually learned that I have a greater like affinity for learning different stuff and basically explaining to someone to understand, right? Really, really in much detail manner. So what he then did was that he came back to me and was like, this React visualization engineering role is not something that is really compulsory for us to have. It's just a nice to have. So what we're going to do but this developer relations role is something that we actually really, really need, because we'll be shipping out a ton of API, we'll be shipping out the SDK. We need someone to come create documentation. We need someone to come work on demo project. We need someone to speak at meetups, conferences. And it seems like you've done that a lot already, even without you realizing it. And I'm like, wow, that was the first time I looked up developer relations engineering. Like, I just Googled that, what is developer relations engineering? And I saw that. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm happy to do it, because bear in mind, the role was paying really, really high when you compare to like what you were earning in Nigeria. Yeah, it was about like 1,200% increase from my current, 1,200% increase from my current. So I'm like, I'm happy to do it. Yeah. So it then,
Then
moved me to like the next interview series, and then I basically killed the interview. So funny how they gave me the role, they gave me an offer an hour after my interview. They were like, wow,
that's quick.
Like one of the quickest offer letter I've ever gotten. So that's they gave me a letter pretty much after like an hour, and I started like almost immediately. So, and I built a ton of project on GPT-3 large language API. Then there was no ChatGPT. So OpenAI also really just started shipping out APIs for large language model at the time. Yeah, and one of my colleagues at my current role even mentioned that, Blessing, the company you worked at made you, like, you were so ahead of all of us. Everywhere. Like, you were so ahead of the time. Because the reason why I shared with him a sample project I built in 2021, where I connected GPT-3 to WhatsApp. So I literally had my own AI in WhatsApp that I could chat with, ask questions. And that's pretty much what ChatGPT does right now. Yeah. And the reason why I did that at the time was that I understood the way of, like, the product mindset that time, that when we need to ship these APIs to a ton of users, because our API was built on top of GPT-3. So if we can ship this to developers will be able to build something like that. So basically that was my time as a developer relations engineer. And then how I got to Circle was that this year I started interviewing, because there was a lot of layoffs at my previous company. And I knew that, man, I need to be on my toes, and because I survived 4 rounds of layoffs. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I knew I needed to, like, get out there to start interviewing. So the Circle recruiter actually reached out to me, sent me an email, and she was like, do you think you'll be able to join the Circle? And I'm like, wow, yeah. Because what you don't realize is that, you know, I told you that also on the side, I'm always learning. So I, like, 2020, 2021, when crypto was actually booming, when it was the thing, I learned Solidity, I learned a couple of all these blockchain terms, I did a ton of projects. There was actually a learning space called Build Space. I was very active in their Discord. I did a ton of their projects, so I understood how to work with Solana blockchain, work with Ethereum virtual machine blockchain, EVMs compatible blockchain. So I already had what I needed to interview at Circle. So when it got to the time for me to interview at Circle, I basically blazed through the interview process, and the team was, they were very, very, very happy to have me, because again, I did, like, for my presentation, you know, part of developer relations engineer interviews, you have to do a presentation. Yeah. You have to do a technical presentation. So for my presentation, I went above and beyond to build something really crazy for the team. I built it from scratch. I actually built it on top of ChatGPT. And what it does is that I connected it to, like, their knowledge bank, where they have a ton of documentation on YouTube, actually. So you copy YouTube videos link, you paste it, and then I built a ChatGPT plugin using the OpenAI ChatGPT retrieval template. I built it, connected it to a vector database where it stores their embeddings. So the moment I get video from YouTube, it transcribes using the YouTube transcript API, ships the text to embedding, vector embedding. I use Pinecone, ships it, and then when you go in ChatGPT, using the plugin, you can just then query it, and then it just answers you back. Results. Yeah, nice. I'm like, this is a nice developer relations project that I would love to work on. And I built it for you guys from scratch, and I'm happy to, like, join the team. And we're like, yeah.
You know, when you're interviewing and you know that you've gotten your job, all their faces are lit up. And
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
That's
exactly.
That's so
good
to know. That's really nice.
So that's how I joined Circle. And Circle is something really different. Like, I've been in the team since July. That's pretty much almost four months. Almost four months. And I've done things that I didn't even think I would be able to do when I started. Yeah. So I've done, like, a lot of stuff. I've traveled a lot. I've learned a lot, built a ton of projects, created a ton of content, because when I joined, that was when we have, like, the teams focusing on content. Created a ton of videos, and that was also when Circle actually shipped a ton of developer tools. Yeah, developer tools, really, and a lot of them came out from beta. And so it was just working from one to the other, creating content on that, working on different projects, and learning a lot, because blockchain is actually really interesting. For most people out there, some people think, it's complex, but it's really, really interesting.
I started learning it and it stopped.
Hopefully you get to a point where you don't have to, and that's what we are actually supporting developers to do. We're building out a ton of tools, a ton of developer focused tools that would help you abstract like a ton of these blockchain complexities, and you just deal with like a normal web tool, like something you're used to, which is RESTful APIs. You're making API endpoint calls, you're integrating into your front end, which is something everybody's really nice. Familiar with.
That'd be really cool. So we're wrapping up already. I know you've mentioned a very good number of advice for new biz in tech, but what's one last thing that you would like to say to anyone that wants to maybe pick up a career in tech, or to anyone that has been struggling with career growth and not getting jobs? What's that thing that they should be doing?
Yeah, so my advice to anyone in that space is build in public. Whether you're learning, whether you're building something, make sure it's in public. Write article about what you've just learned. Create a video about what you just learned. If you can start a newsletter. Even if you don't have a job, just make sure that everybody that are in your circle, or everybody that is out there, or everybody that cares to listen, or everybody that cares to see your content, knows that you are the go-to person for either JavaScript or whatever you're learning. So for example, what I would do is, if I was learning in tech right now, is I'll build projects, I'll write articles about it, I'll create videos about it, I'll probably share a newsletter, or share constantly on Twitter. What you're doing is that you're putting bots that are automatically looking for jobs for you, or you're putting things out there that are automatically attracting opportunities to you. So you're basically going to you'll be in a position where a lot of all these things you've done will then come full circle to give you that fantastic opportunity where someone will find you online and they'll be like, oh, I'm happy to work with you. Either come join us as an expert in what you're learning, or either we have this role because you've been tweeting about it, because you've been sharing a ton of stuff about it, come join our company based off of that. So if you're learning anything, I'll just make sure I do it in public.
Really solid advice. Build in public, learn in public, because at the end of the day, nobody really knows how good you are till you actually share it.
Until you actually share it. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Can I add?
I really enjoyed this conversation.
Isn't it? Can I add something? A ton of this advice, a ton of this video, like I also give on my YouTube channel. So if they don't mind subscribing to my
YouTube channel. I would put your YouTube channel link in the description box.
That's great. Thank you. And one thing I wanted to share something. If I remember anything, I'll let you know. But pretty much that's it.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed sharing your journey.
No, yeah, it was fun. Thank you for having me on. And I look forward to maybe like doing a physical one. Maybe it grows. Okay. You can invite me for episode 2, because there's more to talk definitely. About.
Definitely. This has been so much fun. Thank you so much. And see you guys in the next episode. Bye.